You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Gather here as a community of people who are more than categories. We gather here as individual people, young and old, male and female, rich and poor, temporarily able and disabled, gay and straight people, black and white and brown, theist, atheist, agnostic, Christian, Buddhist, feminist, humanist. We gather here as more than categories. We gather here each ministering to one another, meeting one another's strength, and encouraging wholeness. And we give thanks rightly for this extraordinary blessing, the gathering together of separate, unique individuals as one whole, one body, our church. Here may our minds stretch, our hearts open, our spirits deepen. Here may we acknowledge our brokenness and be ever stirred by love's infinite possibilities. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. This is a service because it means to serve you. And this is worship, which comes from the Old English worth-ship, because it raises to worth things that matter. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you here on behalf of many generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community, one that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and to follow their own spiritual path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. You are invited to kick on with us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation. Let's join in singing our opening hymn, Spirit of Life. It only has one verse, but it's so good we'll sing it twice. Please stand as you're able. Once more, let it fill your soul. Spirit of life, come unto me. It's our tradition to share recent events on our spiritual journeys in an open forum of fellowship. This is an act of trust that helps us bind our fellowship more closely together and makes this space truly sacred. So if you've had a recent event that's been significant on your spiritual journey, like these perhaps, you can share it by coming up, lighting one of these candles, and telling us as briefly as possible about it. Not just for time constraints, but to encourage discussion during coffee time. Now, some things may lie too deep for words, so you are also welcome to light a candle in silence. But whether you choose to come up or not, you can take part in expanding the circle of our compassion by listening with an open heart and mind, and by refraining from comment. So I now open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. So we've opened a new frontier of this ministry at the Pembroke School, where I've begun conducting chapel services, rites of passage, and being pastorally available to staff and students. The school is officially non-denominational, as all schools should be, really. So why even have a chaplain or a chapel in a non-denominational school? I mean, what sense does that make? The principal sent a letter around to staff introducing and welcoming me, and at the end of that letter was tucked what I think is a clue to that conundrum of what's a chaplain doing at a non-denominational school. Apparently, this: I will actively encourage us to develop a spiritual language to accompany the school's open-minded, engaging, and intellectually rigorous culture. Well, certainly Unitarian Universalism's principle of the free and responsible search for truth and meaning does indeed sound perfectly compatible with a traditional liberal arts education. So I guess we're seen as the non-denominational denomination, the denomination you get when you're not having denominations. One that talks about religion, intellectualizes it, but doesn't actually do it. So does this mean chapel services are meant to be just another series of teaching moments, and the chaplain just another kind of teacher? Or is there scope for building the sort of spiritual awareness, spiritual health, and spiritual depth in that community as we have in this one? So many questions. And getting the right answers to those questions are important for us because the stakes are high. This new frontier of ministry represents an unprecedented growth of impact for Unitarianism and this church, an unprecedented chance to build our brand massively in the state for generations to come, all without directly proselytizing. Don't need to. They know where I'm from and who I am. So I did some intelligence gathering before I said yes, picking the brains of students, teachers, parents, old scholars to get a sense of what had been expected from chapel services and chaplaincy in this avowedly non-denominational place. And of course their responses varied, but they all included one clear common caveat. You can do anything you like in chapel, but whatever you do, don't mention God! Even though I'm there because I'm clergy. Even though everyone I engage with in that context will know I'm clergy. Even though that engagement takes place in a chapel and is called a chapel service. Even though they'll see me not talking about God in chapel while standing in front of this, a bloody massive cross that is part of the very chapel structure. Don't talk about God. Shh. Talk about an elephant in the room. But it's really the same elephant that's right here in this room and that we've been managing reasonably well. We're not, and we never have been, an exclusively atheist denomination. I'm sorry if you ever got that impression, but we're not. What we are is a free, non-creedal, and inclusive one. It's a big difference. Now, if you simply cannot bear being in such a community with theists, there are atheist churches out there, like Godless Revival and Sunday Assembly. Unitarians are a community of people who are more than belief categories, even that blasted binary of theist-atheist. So, in going into this, I feel a little bit constrained in my Unitarian freedom and authenticity when I'm told God is utterly out of bounds. The one thing that has distinguished our ministries since 1568 is freedom of the pulpit and the pew. Nobody tells you what to preach or how. And we're being told you can't talk about God makes me want to go God, Godly, God, 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 Goddington, God, Godburger, Godsky. I mean, people talk of God during sex, but not in chapels. Oh, my spirit of life. Oh, my ground of being. Now, if I'm to stand up there, that place has got to be made more inclusive looking to reflect the multicultural reality of the student body. One idea was adorning the structural cross you saw with symbols of all the various faith traditions represented by the student body, which is just about all of the faith traditions. But these symbols, if you did that, these symbols would still be hanging off a cross like something nailed to it. So it's not only in bad taste, but deceptive. It would look like inclusion, but multiple symbols will in fact exclude those in the de facto faith majority, which we all know is people who identify with no formal faith tradition. And worse, it'll exclude those for whom any contact with religious symbols and language is actually offensive or maybe even traumatic. Perhaps the most inclusive space is going to be a neutral one, free of icons, so the cross is going to go, I'm assured. But a chapel that prohibits any God talk will nevertheless exclude those who do have some conception of, or indeed some belief in, a divine being, however vague, however coerced, however unexamined, from Hindus to Christians to Jews to you name it. This is a real bind that characterizes not just that school, but the whole idea of an open, multicultural, free society that will include believers and non-believers and those hostile to belief, and this bind isn't going to go away soon. The word religion comes from religare, to bind up again. You think of ligaments, now they bind up. Binding up assumes some lack of cohesion. And religion itself contributes to this lack of cohesion, dividing theist from atheist from don't know, don't care, it's all BS anyway. This divisive and tedious culture war between God and no God is breaking the ties that can bind us as one human race, is killing what remains of any cohesive social contract or sense of human solidarity. Theist and non-theist must learn to love and respect one another and live together in peace, or we are doomed to eternal strife, with each side seeking to prevail over the other and perhaps banish it. This is a bind. And who are you going to call to seek direction, a guidance out of it? Maybe not a who at all, but more of a what, and something, a hymn that I've had call to reference over the last couple of weeks. The hymn is Blessed Spirit of My Life. Please stand as you're able. Spirit of life, Spirit of my life, blessed Spirit of my life, however you want to phrase it, Unitarians have always made space for the notion of a higher unifying power. We've just not insisted on belief in what's beyond clear, direct experience. That's one of my teachers at Manchester Unitarian College, Cliff Reed. Many see this unity in terms of the interconnectedness of the universe and of humanity, something which unites, hence the name Unitarian, some unifying principle or spirit, however poorly defined. So the outreach challenge of this chaplaincy is a microcosm of the theological challenge progressive religion must meet in bringing fractured and fragmented society together along certain key values that we can uphold with or without reference to the old gods. But there's a problem for me. I am self-aware enough to know that I have biases in doing this, and to a degree, it's your problem and theirs. I do have a fairly persistent notion, sense of this unifying something, what many call God, though others choose not to name. I mean, come on, why would anyone go into ministry in the first place? It's not a great career move. It's been the death of my social life. But this unifying principle, I can only define or depict by the whole its absence leaves. For me, the presence of what we call God is inferred by its absence. And this poem puts it much more beautifully than I ever could.
His grace is no longer called for before meals. Farmed fish multiply without his intercession. Bread production rises through disease-resistant grains devised scientifically to mitigate his faults. Yet, though we rebelled against him, like adolescents, uplifted to see an oppressive father banished, a bearded hermit, to the desert, we confess to missing him at times. Miss him during the civil wedding, when at the blossomy altar of the registrar's desk, we wait in vain to be fed a line containing words like everlasting and divine. Miss him when the TV scientist explains the cosmos through equations, leaving our planet to revolve on its axis aimlessly, a wheel skidding in the snow. Miss him when the radio catches a snatch of plain chant from some echoey priory, when the gospel choir raises its collective voice to ask, shall we gather at the river? Or the forces of the oratorio converge on, I know that my Redeemer liveth, and our contracted hearts lose a beat. Miss him when a choked voice at the crematorium recites the poem about fearing no more the heat of the sun. Miss him when we stand in judgment on a lank crucifixion in an art museum, its stripe-like ribs testifying to rank. Miss him when the gamma rays recorded on the satellite graph seem arranged into a celestial score, the music of the spheres, the Ave Verum Corpus of the observatory lab. Miss him when we stumble on the breast lump for the first time and an involuntary prayer escapes our lips. When a shadow crosses our bodies on an X-ray screen. When we receive a transfusion of foaming blood sacrificed anonymously to save life. Miss him when we exclaim his name spontaneously in awe or anger, as a woman in birth ward calls to her long dead mother. Miss him when the linen-covered dining table holds warm bread rolls and shiny glasses of red wine. Miss him when a dove swoops from the orange grove in a tourist village just as the monastery bell begins to take its toll. Miss him when our journey leads us under leaves of Gothic tracery, an arch of overlapping branches that meet like hands in Michelangelo's creation. Miss him when trudging past a church, We catch a residual blast of incense, a perfume on par with the fresh-baked loaf which Meloche compared to happiness. Miss him when our newly fitted kitchen comes in shaker style and we order a matching set of Mother Ann Lee chairs. Miss him when we listen to the prophecy of astronomers that the visible galaxies will recede as the universe expands. Miss him when the sunset makes its presence felt in the stained glass window of the fake antique lounge bar. Miss him the way an uncoupled glider, riding the evening thermals, misses its tug. Miss him as the lovers, shrugging shoulders outside the cheap hotel, ponder what their next move should be. Even feel nostalgic, odd days, for his second coming, like standing in the brick dome of a dovecot after the birds have flown.
So the persistent presence of an unignorable silence, an unignorable absence, like an empty birdhouse, like a silent nursery still set up for a stillborn child because no one can bear to take it down. A place can be haunted by those who were never even there, if there is where they are missed. But I'm also a realist. I have no concept of death, maybe even the death of God, beyond mere extinction. Let me offer you an analogy. My father has been dead these 16 years, which means he does not exist anymore in any literal way. He is nowhere. He is as gone can be. And yet, there is nothing more present sometimes than an absence. In my father's very absence, I am made aware of him every day. I catch myself talking to him most days. And he to me, though not in words exactly, sometimes in dreams, he is there just out of focus, tender and watchful, a detached observer of the life I am living and the choices I am making and the person I am constructing as I move from the past we shared into a future that is mine alone. It's my dream time, if you like. His presence is not judging, but a kind of benign marveling at watching something unfold. Well, you could say, of course, every parent lives on in their child. The child's internalized the parent, and they're in your genes and memes and in your deepest programming. He's not real in the same sense that you are, but there he really is, a shadow in my consciousness, an unconscious peripheral vision. My highest points and my lowest points and my darkest nights when I feel like the struggle of living avails nothing, and on my most glorious days when my heart sings with the joy of living, the prayer that comes out of me is the same. I wish my father were here right now. To miss him is to call him into being as a felt presence, and feelings are real. And who would be so obtuse as to say, well, if you can't see it or measure it, it's a delusion. If sensing and measuring is the one and only yardstick for the real, we should also give up on love itself. Love cannot be seen, it cannot be measured. Is love a delusion? Or, more likely, is our common sense idea of what's real rather narrow? I do not offer this very personal reflection as proof of God or a world beyond this one, which is a task beyond the greatest minds who ever lived. Still less would I ever insist that you or any student accept it as objective truth. I think I just mean to say that subjective truth, like the dream time, is real as well. For instance, well water is objectively always about the temperature of the ground, about 18 degrees Celsius. But if you drink that 18 degree water on a hot day like today, and on a freezing cold day, Your experience of it will be radically different, though the water is objectively the same. I'd go so far as to say that the objective temperature of the water is meaningless by itself, that your experience of the water is the only real thing. Subjectivity, our inner life, is our reality, the one we walk around in, and there is no escaping that. We perceive things not how they are, but how we are. To bind up the theist and the non-theist in an inclusive vision of a cohesive church, school, or society, we must first begin by respecting the fact that the inner world of other people is real to them, that their subjective experiences are not to be dismissed as delusional simply because we do not experience them the same way. This calls not for an intellectual intelligence, but for an emotional one. An emotional intelligence, a courage to accept that your experience of water or God or whatever is not threatened because others don't have the same one. The way we experience the world is our only truth, finally. And since we live in a world of others, we need to be secure enough in ourselves to go beyond the neurotic need to be capital R right about things and set other people straight. Do you, finally, want your view to prevail at all costs? Or do you want to be in community? You can't have both. Post-Enlightenment history has been a tale of how we do or don't live with the absence of religious authority that once gave us meaning. But we are no less divided now and in need of binding up than once we were under the old gods. Like the longing for my absent father, those of us who long for the invisible God call it into being, into our felt reality, and it is in those moments, that God is not just real, but unifying and clarifying and guiding. It's guided me away from Catholicism. It's guided me to Unitarian churches. It guided me to Unitarian College. It guided me to this ministry, and now, of course, elsewhere too. And there's no real evidence that that guiding has been misguided. So far, so good, which is all any of us can trust with any certainty. So in heading toward this rather daunting outreach under the direction of this unifying principle, however internal and vague it is, my aim is to create the sort of community Unitarian communities aspire to, the sort we have here, not merely tolerant, but generous in the desire to respect the inner spiritual life and path of each person as we work to discover a common and a greater good than our own private flourishing, whether that's our own individual flourishing, whether it's the flourishing of our church or the flourishing of our Unitarian movement. May we truly be a church for everyone who earnestly seeks to serve that greater good of rebinding the human community. Theist, atheist, whatever, none. Amen. Our closing hymn is "Ours is a Town for Everyone." Please stand as you're able. Benediction is words of a Hindu proverb. There are hundreds of paths up the mountain, all leading to the same place, so it doesn't matter which path you take. The only person wasting time and energy is the one who runs around the mountain telling everyone that his or her path is wrong. Don't be that person. Amen, and have a great week.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.